I am Algerie Eckhart. I was married to Melvin L. Eckhart, better known as Buddy Eckhart, for 44 years. Unfortunately, he passed away on 3/6/09, but he lived a wonderful, joyful life when he was well in the last 15 months of his life when he fought cancer. The first thing he would usually say every morning was, "Okay, what do I have to do to see tomorrow?" And then he would proceed with his daily normal activities and anything that Hopkins asked him to do also. His passion from the time he was a little boy was dancing. He and his sister won contests in the 50s, what we used to refer to as jitterbug dancing. And later in life, we always enjoyed dancing as well, but after we had 4 children and we're raising our family, we didn't have a lot of extra income or energy for a lot of dancing. So after our children left us empty nesters, we joined a group called the Countryside Kickers out of Pasadena, Maryland, and we became country line and couples dancers, and we did that for 15 years. My husband loved it. He loved to teach other people how to dance. One of the things that people would say that he had a passion for dancing and a smile just so big that everybody knew he was loving what he was doing when he was out there. He was always the first one on the dance floor and the last one to leave.
Why do you think it made him so happy? What did it do for him, dancing?
I think he enjoyed moving his body and expressing his joy by moving his body. I think God is very much about music and dancing, and he was very connected to God, and we've always enjoyed that passion of dancing. Our children do the same thing. Our son and my daughter-in-law, they were asked to do professional dancing. You're born with a certain talent, but I also think that you are born with a certain personality and self-confidence when you're on that dance floor that allows you the freedom of just letting your body do what you like to do, move it to the music. He loved music. He could tell you every record recording and the artist going back to the 40s and the 50s, if there was a song playing, "Oh, that's so-and-so," and that was during this era. He just had a passion for music and dance and life. We had 4 children, and his passion for his children and his grandchildren were a little bit greater than his passion for dancing, but I mean, the children loved it. We took the children dancing with us. We took the grandchildren dancing with us, and they always knew that Pop would be out on the floor with them. He didn't have any inhibitions, I guess is the best word to use. He just always said, "I'm having a good time. I'm not hurting anybody, and I'm enjoying myself. And if they're getting a laugh out of me, so be it."
How did his passion for his family show itself? What did he do?
Whatever project that the children were involved in, he would be a part of it. He was a great disciplinarian. He expected respect, and there was rules that had to be followed, but they knew there was many rewards for following those rules. The proudest thing we ever did was raise 4 wonderful, respectful, responsible, dedicated children who are good Christians and good parents. And when you get to that point in life that your children have children, it is a gift that no one can explain to you, but you feel like that child gave you this gift. They had that baby for you, not for themselves. And he couldn't wait. You know, he was in his late 50s when we had our first grandchild, and that came up at every family occasion. When am I going to get a grandchild? And he loved to teach. Well, he built three swing sets, the wood swing sets for grandchildren at different locations in their houses. So they knew that Pop would build them a swing. He would build them sandboxes. He would put together any toy that they had. And anything that they wanted within reason, with approval from their parents. They would get that for their special occasions as well. The joke was, ask Pop-Pop if they wanted or needed something. Ask Pop-Pop. He'll get it.
It sounds like it brought him a lot of joy to bring joy to other people.
It did. It did, especially to his children and his grandchildren.
Is that part of the reason you think he enjoyed dancing so much, is because it brought others happiness?
Could be. It could be. But I think it brought him a lot of happiness. He just loved to move his body. He loved to build things. We jokingly call him a visionary. We had new windows put in our house many years ago, and they were willing to haul off the windows, and they were the colonial windows with the 9-pane wood. And he said, no, I'll find something for them. And I thought, just another thing to fill up the shed. Well, one day I came home, and he had built 2 curio cabinets out of these windows. One was a smaller one, one was a tall one. And, I mean, it was things like that that he could envision. Most people would, I didn't want the windows around the house. Most people would think that they're just junk, but he could look at a piece of furniture or a piece of wood and hit another favorite thing. And we'd go shopping or we'd go to antique stores and say, oh, that's really nice. I can build that. I can make that. So that was a joke whenever we were out anywhere and somebody said, oh, I like that. Get Pop-Pop, he'll build it for you. He'll make it for you.
How often did you go out and dance together?
When we originally started, we danced Monday nights at a Catholic church. We danced Tuesday night at a fireman's hall. We danced Wednesday night at the La Fontainebleau in Glen Burnie. And we danced Friday nights at IBEW, which is a union hall near the airport. And we danced Saturday nights at the Elks Club in Severna Park on Jumpers Hole Road. So for many, many years, we were out there 4 to 6 times a week because somebody would come up, would find a dance somewhere. And Sundays were, you know, always reserved for us doing things with the family. But if there was any activity during the week, Monday through Saturday, when we were dancing, you know, of course, we would go to that family activity before we would go dancing, because family was always first in his heart. He says, family comes first.
And you mentioned that you started to raise money along the way.
Oh, yes. We've been members since 1994. We've been members of the Relay for Life Cancer Society, and where people would walk around the track at the high school is where we always had them in Anne Arundel County high schools. We would dance. We'd set up a dance floor. We would carry the wood. The guys would get the wood and screw the wood together and make a dance floor every year. And they would go over early in the morning and set up the dance floor. The rest of us would start coming around 4 or 5. And then we would dance all night long rather than walk. Sometimes we would take a break and walk around the trail or the track with them. But most of the time, we would literally dance all night long. And then the next morning, I mean, we would all bring food. We would have grills, and it was a real party, a real fellowship atmosphere. We were all there. It was a wonderful experience to be amongst that many people that were there trying to help in any way. There were survivors there, which he was one for several years. And you know, there was survivors, members there. And what we do is raise money, and we become a team, and we try to get a little competitive with the other teams and see who had raised. I should have gotten an amount for you, because over the years, I know we're probably over $500,000 at least. Many a time we raised $200,000 at one function.
Absolutely. Whose idea was it to do that?
Well, our so-called unofficial leader is Fred Lord, and he's our teacher. He's our instructor, and his wife, Ro, plays the music. Well, somehow or another, he got involved in it, and he said, I'm going to be playing music at the Relay for Life, and we all said, wow, what a wonderful thing. But since then, we have also did many benefit dances for individuals who have a problem whether it's cancer or whether it's one gentleman had diabetes real bad. So we will do fund. We hear of a need. One, their house burnt down. We will have a benefit dance. And amazingly, when we started out, we were so happy if we raised $2,000 to $3,000. We had a benefit dance last February and raised over $10,000. So we're pretty proud of that. We can do that. We're amazed that we can do that. But I'm blessed that I send letters out. That's how I raise most of my money. I send letters out to anybody and everybody I've met in my entire life. And they're generous enough to send me checks back for the American Cancer Society. And we average $2,200 to $2,800 because my buddy and I were a team with other members, but you know, our donation went in together. So we would average about anywhere from $2,200 to $2,800 was our contribution, was our to the team's total.
Tell me some of your favorite memories of dancing with Buddy and kind of what it brought. To dance like that.
If I wanted to take a break, you've seen Patrick Swayze.
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing. Okay, did you see the way he would get on his knee and come around and ask the girl? He would do a little dance at the table, get on his knee, and extend his hand. So the entire dance floor is looking at him perform. So I had to get up and dance with him after that. So he knew that would get my attention.
You were married at this point?
Yes, we were married at this point, yes.
Quite a romantic, this guy.
He was. Well, our wedding day is February the 14th.
You had mentioned that before, that February the 14th was a special day, not just because it's your anniversary, but you said something else had happened that day on your 44th anniversary.
Oh, yes. On our 44th anniversary, he was getting pretty tired of the illness at that point and pretty wore out. He had lost probably close to 70 pounds. He was very weak. He hadn't really eaten a meal since the previous September. But he insisted on going dancing, which we continued to dance even though he was in that position. But he wanted to go out dancing. And I knew he really did not physically want to do it. But I knew in his heart and mind he wanted. He said, I want to take you dancing for our anniversary. Like we always go dancing on our anniversary. And I said, well, we can dance right here at the house. And he said, no, I want to take you out. So we were only able to do a couple dances. But he insisted that we kept up our routine and our passion of dancing. And it was the last time we went dancing, and he passed March the 6th, which was like 3 weeks later. While during his illness, if he was really uncomfortable or in pain, I wouldn't even know it. I only knew it because he would adjust his body position. He would squirm. He would get up. He'd say, I'm going to take a little walk around the house or go downstairs and take a little walk. But he really... He may have had one or two times when he said how uncomfortable he was, but he didn't bemoan. He didn't get up and say, you know, another day of misery or pain. He got up and said, what do I need to do to see tomorrow? And that was, he made it very easy for me and the children to watch him go through this. And that was his protection, his protectiveness of us.
What do you think being diagnosed with cancer changed about him? What do you think it did to who he was inside?
He was pretty realistic before he was diagnosed with cancer.
Do you think his relationships with you or with God or with his family got stronger?
I think his relationship with God got stronger to the point where he could be more vocal about it. Mine, previous to my husband's diagnosis, which I think I mentioned to you, my daughter had Burkitt's lymphoma at 38, which was extremely rare. And we had a year and a half of a very stressful time, which... Buddy insisted that he be the one to take her. Her husband is an airline pilot, so the days that he was not available to take my daughter Melanie Buddy insisted that he be the one. He took her every day. She had to come every day for months, not just once a week or not once every 3 weeks. Every day she had to come up. And he was her protective. Everybody said that, you know, he was going to be there to protect her in any way that he could other than medically. And he was. He was. And we practically moved into her house because she had five children at the time of her diagnosis. And there again, whatever we could do, you know, he would say, whatever we have to do, whatever we can do today to make it better for Melanie and her husband and her children, we have to do it.
You were saying his relationship with God got stronger.
It's stronger. He was able to vocalize it more.
What does that mean?
I mean, he was able to talk to other people about it more than what we normally would. I like to refer to Christians a lot of time as the silent majority. And I think that even myself, since my husband's illness, and I think I vocalize my faith much more than I used to, because you're always afraid of being not politically correct, not offending someone of another religion. But I think I'm much more vocal now than I ever was, and I know for a fact that he was, and he was very comfortable with his life on earth. He was very confident with his life here, and he was very confident of where he was going for eternal life with God and Jesus.
Do you think that when he got sick, he took extra special care to dance as much as he could, so to speak,
because he knew that his life, yes, I think he always had the passion, but what amazed our friends and fellow dancers was that he kept the energy going, and he didn't stop. I mean, he was still, even though he was the so-called ill one out there, he was still on the dance floor more than the rest of us who were so-called healthy. But yeah, I think that, but he used to say these phrases to me 20, 30 years ago. You got to get all the gusto that you can while you can. So it might have been increased some, but it wasn't the reason for his increased activity. He always had the passion of, always full of energy. The man only had a double hernia the entire time that I knew him. And then he gets sick and boom, he's in stage four. The first illness that he gets.
Tell me some of your favorite memories of dancing with him.
Oh, there's so many of them. At weddings, you know, when they would ask people to come to the floor to do different goofy things, he would have to be the one that went out there because he didn't mind what he was doing as long as he was out there. There's just, I probably should have put some things down on paper if I knew you were going to ask me that. I might be able to come up with some. Dancing with the children, he would drag the children out and dance with them. And at his eulogy, my one daughter said she can't wait to dance again with him. So we have pictures of him dancing with all the grandkids at any given time. We have pictures of him dancing with all the children. At his viewing, we were amazed at how many pictures we had of him dancing with friends. So we were going around gathering pictures, and here's one of him dancing with Betty. Here's one of him dancing with Pat. Here's one, you know, he just loved to dance. My mind is thinking back to your question while I'm talking. But he would, and he also, he liked to improvise, you know. With line dancing, there are specific steps that you do to different music to the beat. Well, he would add something. He liked to improvise, so he would have his own little step that he would put in there. There was a beat that was available. He would add something to it. So he was fun to watch. Everyone would tell you he was fun to watch on the dance floor.
Tell me a little bit about where he was from and what sort of upbringing he had.
When we met originally, we actually met very much so in a little place like Happy Days, Al's Place. It was a little confectionery store with booths that sold, that had a little luncheonette type of thing, and had the jukebox with the music, and that's how we met. He did live about 4 blocks from my home, but I had never met him before the age of 14, and he was 17. And that was our first meeting, and the first time I seen him, and I know this sounds cliche or however you want to say it, but I said to myself, that was the guy for me, you know, and I'm only 14 years old, but we married young. I was only 18 and a half years old when we married, which put him at 21 and a half years old. He was drafted 2 years after we were married into the military. He was a office clerk while he was in the military. And we had our first child right afterwards. And we were married for 3.5 years before we had a child. And 3 years later, we had 4 children. So I had a set of twins, were the last one. And he was the type of guy that was very responsible, always took care of his family. So, therefore, he had to work 2 or 3 jobs to keep us well fed and sheltered. He got a job when he came out of the service with the post office. He was a mailman for 40 years. And he worked other part-time jobs as well. He had went to Rhett's Electrical School and got a degree. He went to Anne Arundel Community College and got a degree there. So he worked on TVs. When the children were very little, we actually, as a family, used to deliver catalogs, Sears and Ward's catalog. He would come up with these jobs that would give us money, and that was our Christmas fun every year, that we would deliver the Ward's catalog and the Sears catalog and walk them up to the, you know, to the people and put them on their doorsteps. And that was our Christmas fun. And we, when the children got a little older, we involved them also. They would break them down for us and tell us whether it was 1 house, 2 house, how many they got. So that was hard work for him and I. He was used to the walking. I wasn't, but it was so much fun. We actually look forward to it. He worked for a TV and electronic repair place part-time. So he would do, and then he went to school through the GI Bill to get his degree. So that was kind of full. He went full time, so that was a part time job, and that gave us a supplement income from the government. But his main job was delivering the mail, and the people on his route just loved him, and he loved them. They were not his patrons, they were not his customers, they were his extended family. And when he retired, they gave him the biggest party, and gave him thousands of dollars as a gift. These people were so wonderful to him, and they kept the relationship going even after he retired. But unfortunately, he was only retired a couple of years before he got ill and then passed on last year. I think some people go through life with that little star on their head or something that says, hey, look at me. And he was one of those people that got people's attention with his personality. He was always concerned with, you know, how you are and asked about you. And he was also concerned about their children, about their grandchildren. He watched a generation grow up and start to have children, just like our children did. So he had a connection, not with just one generation, with 2 generations. And he was just well-liked. He after he retired, he started to be a group of what we call the Thursday morning at our church, the Thursday morning men. They get together to have breakfast, but then to do any little repairs around the church that was needed. So he had just started that. And he also taught the youth groups how to dance with our friends Fred and Roe Lord. We would go down on a Sunday night. That's when the youth groups dance, and we would teach them how to country line dance, especially during the harvest season. Seemed to be the time that they wanted us there. They liked to be there around Halloween and then Thanksgiving. So we would do that. We did that every year for a long time.
Did he enjoy teaching the...
Oh, yes. He enjoyed teaching any new person that came and was struggling. He would make sure he got alongside of them and help them out. And I can't tell you how many people have said that Bud got me to dance, made me stay on that dance. Don't go off. Stay out here. You have to stay out here. And gave them the confidence to stay out there to do the dance and then follow him. In fact, there was a couple dances that he used to have a following. Like I said, he would do his own thing, and a dance would come on, and there would be a group of people that followed him around the floor to do these dances. And you weren't necessarily supposed to be going around the floor to do the dances, but that's the way he would do it, and everybody would just join in because it looked like fun, and they wanted to have fun also.
Describe to me what he was wearing during these dances.
In the beginning, we would always dress country. That was in the 90s and in the early 2000s. But then we'd have the country attire. There are skirts that match the guys' shirts. The guys always have jeans. They'd have a black hat. And we would look like the country singers. Oh, always boots, yeah. Yeah, we'd have a boots. But then... we started to get more relaxed. We relaxed more about it after about 10 years, I guess. And we got older, even with our feet and all. Some people went to tennis shoes to dance. But the tennis shoes were dancing tennis shoes because they developed tennis shoes that looked just like a dancing shoes that looked just like tennis shoes that had the same support and all. So he preferred boots over anything, but he did have two pair of the dancing tennis shoes. He remained wearing jeans all the time, but basically he wore, like, golf shirts after that. They were cooler. The sleeves weren't as long. He didn't have to have the tie. I'm trying to think of the name of the tie that they, around. So on occasion there would be a so-called dress-up country dance, and we would, go back to that, reverse back to that type, just because that was the dance. But we would also have other dances, too. You know, we would have Halloween dances, Christmas dances. For the Ravens, you would have a purple night for the Ravens. For the Orioles, you'd have an orange night. We would also dress for, we wouldn't find any reason to have a party atmosphere, and, get a little silly.
Very good.
I should have brought you some pictures of our Halloween costumes.
We'll correspond by mail. I have some stuff to send you. You can send me some stuff too.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't know if I have any more specific questions, but just anything, memories that have popped into your head in the last half hour, anything that you wanted to sort of, to paint a whole picture of your husband.
We would take family vacations. We would take a week in June and a week in August, and everyone would get together. Well, Pop always got to help carry everything to the beach, and we would load him down, and we would put a swimming pool, a children's swimming pool, on his head. He'd have a swimming pool on his head. See, none of that bothered him at all. You could load him down with anything, and the sillier he looked, the happier he was for the children. He'd have two or three children in a wagon and umbrellas and chairs, and we always looked forward to that. He always had to have his children around him. It, like, always fed us life when the children and the grandchildren are there. When he got sick, and one of the, was mentioned that we shouldn't have the grandchildren there because of the germs. And he said, oh, no, they give me life. They're not going to give me germs. They're going to give me life. So we made the exception and let them be there when we were restricting other people because his numbers were so low during his illness. And then Pop was always the one that got put in the tub first, and each grandchild got dumped in there with him to bathe. So he would bathe each grandchild, and we would get him out. And then, of course, when he's finished, he's sitting in an inch of sand now. So then he'd have to get up, take a shower, because you'd have to scrape the sand out after all those grandkids were in there. But he loved to do that, you know, take a bath with me, I'll wash you down. And they all remember that. He just wasn't a pop-pop that laughed and enjoyed what they did. He laughed with them and doing what they did with them.
That's very nice. Sounds like quite a character.
He was, and we would take our second week, and we would always go to Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. And he loved Myrtle Beach also.
Very nice. Okay. Well, this has been great. Hope you've enjoyed telling me about him as much as I've enjoyed hearing about him.
I have, and I probably would think a dozen more things that I should have told you. Maybe I'll jot them down. Mm-hmm. I should have jotted them down. It's with my friend. It has been so, you know, hectic.
Well, you know, there's no reason we can't do this again. So
okay.
If you think of stuff that you want to say, we can pick a time and meet back up and go for round two. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I probably want to mention to you is that with the responsibility with the children and all, we had, you know, for economical reasons, back in the 70s, we had a wood-burning stove. So we had a big 50th birthday party for him. We had a big 60th birthday party for him. Each of the children would get up and say something. Well, the 50th, my one son said that his famous word with wood was, it heats you three times. It heats you when you cut it, it heats you when you stack it, and it heats you when you burn it. And that was, they remember that they had responsibilities. They had things that, you know, they had to do, which I think makes them better husbands, better men, and better role models for their children as well.
That's nice.
Yeah. Credit than I deserve, like I said. Another thing comes to thought that recently, like 2 weeks after my husband was diagnosed, we keep a large group of friends. We have very dear friends that we go out to dinner frequently with, and along with our dancing and movies and all, and they said they were going to go to movies. Did we want to go to dinner and movies? Now, this is like, it was like 8 or 10 of us that went. Well, we said, yeah, we'll go. We didn't know anything about the movie, so we went to the movie, and it was a great movie, and it was inspirational. But as we were leaving, when I went in the ladies' room, the ladies were crying. The movie happened to be The Bucket List. And when we came out, everybody is apologizing to Buddy and I for taking us there, because with his recent diagnosis and treatment and all, we had no idea what the bucket list was about. And my husband says, don't be upset, guy. Guys, it's entertainment, and it's part of life. The only difference between me and someone else, maybe you or the average person, is that I probably have an idea of what I'm going to die with for sure. When I'm going to die, I don't have that idea. But you or someone else, you don't have that privileged information right now. So that makes the difference. But live life every moment and do what you have to do to see tomorrow. And but he was comforting them. They all felt so bad. And we always would go for coffee and some dessert after whatever we were doing, dancing or movies or whatever. They just felt horrible. And he had to turn around and make them feel good about taking us to the bucket list, which, you know, we enjoyed, but it, you know, it was something to think about at the moment with us just recently being diagnosed and everything. But his attitude was, it's just entertainment and it's life.